Welcome to Lockdown Lowdown with Lily Newman. That's me, the Managing Director of Morgan James Consulting. And I'm really pleased to have in the hot seat Mark Vigil, our marketing expert from Big Sound Marketing. And
Hello.
Mark, you are rocking the lockdown hair. You've not made it to the hairdressers yet, then.
No, I've not. No, not made it to the barber yet. I'm the wild man of lockdown at the moment, unfortunately.
You've not quite got to the stage where you can tie it all back.
Yeah, not quite got the top knot. I don't know. Maybe I like it, maybe I don't. I'm in two minds.
Anyhow, looking great. I just wondered if you can tell us, just open up with telling us a little bit about your specialist area of expertise. I know we've worked together for a while, but just tell everybody about what you do.
Yes. So, yeah, thank you very much for having me on, Lily. So my name's Mark Vigil. I'm Managing Director of Big Sound Marketing. And we are a full service marketing agency, so we specialise in both online and offline communications. So that would include things like social media, web development, search advertising, but then some more traditional channels as well, like print material, sales collateral, events, video and PR as well.
Now, lots of this, obviously, everything's been called to a halt, particularly your sector has been affected hugely. Can you just tell me a little bit about, I know you've been busy supporting clients during lockdown, how has it affected your business and what sort of support have you been able to give your clients?
Yeah, so it's certainly, I mean, I think across sort of every industry, every sector, obviously with a few notable exceptions, I think it's caused a slowdown or a decline in workload. And that's, for us as a business, that has been the case. We are fortunate in that a lot of our client relationships are on more of a retainer basis, sort of long-term retainers. So rather than us sitting and having to wait for the phone to ring, the question for our clients more has been, do they keep us going? Do they reduce the amount of work we do for them? Do they push pause, that type of thing? So we've certainly experienced a drop off in, our anticipated work levels, but we've managed to sort of keep things quite steady and stable, and things seem to be
So does that mean you still
now.
Get paid whether you're working or not then if you're on a retainer?
Well, this is the challenge, and I suppose main objective for us is it's our responsibility, with those types of commercial relationships to always be proactively adding value to our clients. So even in times like this, completely unprecedented, the onus has been on us to add value to our clients, suggest activity that they can do both now or use this sort of quieter period to do some housekeeping and preparation for when we come out the other side so that our clients are really ready to hit the ground running.
I know for us, we've been wanting to develop a website, a new website for the last 12 months or so, and we've been talking about it, but it's finally given us the time, and we thank you very much for that, for doing a fantastic job. So have you found other companies have used this quiet time just to regroup and look at how they're going to position themselves?
Yeah, I think it would be time well spent, obviously, if you're in a position to do so, and particularly, a website's perfect example of one of those big projects that probably always gets pushed to the bottom of the to-do list. So that would certainly be, an area where there'd be time well spent is thinking about where haven't I had the headspace to really sit down and think about, our website, our CRM system, really drilling down into our data, all these things that you knew would add value, but you just didn't have time to do. So that would, that's certainly something we've been working on. And then also, I suppose for us, kind of the COVID-19 experience from our client point of view has happened in two parts, because the first part was really about working with our clients. I think broadly speaking, just to do the right thing and nothing more than that, no sort of ulterior motive, just think about you as a company and how can you, maybe support the national effort or do the right thing. And it wasn't about sales, it wasn't about promotion, it was just looking at, your resources and thinking, can we help in any way, if at all? And there was a period of time where we would share that news on behalf of our clients through social media specifically. And I think there was an appetite for that kind of good news. And I think people took it in good faith and goodwill. The tone of voice was never self-congratulatory or, look how wonderful we are. It was literally a case of, we're a company trying to do our bit. We thank our key workers. We've made this donation. We're supporting in whichever way we can.
Well, I think that was one of the ways we really benefited. And I know that you and Martin from your team were fantastic when we set up Cakes of Kindness. And originally I pledged to bake 1,000 cakes and deliver them to key workers and NHS workers and vulnerable neighbours. And when we decided to go national and turn it into the 10,000 Cakes of Kindness campaign, you were fantastic in helping us to increase our social media presence, so that we've now got nearly 100 bakers baking around the country and committed to making 100 cakes for their local neighbourhood.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you for that.
No, I mean, our pleasure, absolutely. You know, delighted to help in a way that we can, because I think Cakes for Kindness is such a fantastic initiative and a wonderful example of where, you know, it's just mucking in, it's helping out, it's a national effort, and it's, you know, it's a nice thing to do.
Now, one of the things, my personal experience of working with you is find that real heightened sense of creativity, and obviously you deliver on our team on the Strategic Leaders Programme, helping companies to understand and develop their marketing campaigns and understanding how do we get more creativity into the business. But this is really deep in your heart, isn't it, into improvisation and comedy is something that you do outside of your day job.
It is, yes. No, it's an extracurricular passion of mine, is comedy, and both scripted, but as you mentioned there, improvised comedy as well. So I'm in a couple of improvised comedy groups, and yeah, a few years ago, I really thought about what improvised comedy can teach us about creativity in the broadest sense, because it's really about trusting your subconscious, following your instincts, you know, trying to get out of your conscious brain and not thinking, really, trying to sort of strip that back and just follow your feet, as we would say in improvised comedy. And alongside that, I perform in improvised comedy groups, so it's that part of it, but also it's the group dynamic and how important, you know, a strong team around you, a team that you trust, a team that you know will sort of catch you if you fall, how that kind of fosters creativity as well. So yeah, a few years ago, I kind of really stripped that back, and it's now a session, as you know, deliver to leaders and their teams in terms of how they can look at creativity in themselves and also their organizations, to really sort of enhance the creativity in their wider organizations. It's not just, you know, snappy marketing ideas or sales campaigns. It can be problem solving in an operational sense. It can be, you know, sort of an accounting decision. There's creativity, you know, potential creativity in all areas of a business.
And would you say that, because I know some people will say, I'm just not creative, you know, I'm not innovative, I'm a really linear thinker. Would you say the most linear of us, you know, those that like things to be very methodical, can tap into that creativity through the kind of workshops that you deliver?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it really boils down to, is I'm, you know, a firm believer that everybody is creative. And I think we have a common misconception that being creative is perhaps being artsy or musical, you know, or doing improvised comedy. But if you've had an idea, you are a creative person. And that's the context in which I look at creativity. Ideas both in your area of influence with an organisation, but maybe the organisation as a whole. And we're all capable of very good ideas.
Now, just thinking about the arts, because the arts are really struggling at the moment. Obviously, we've still not got a date for theatres to unlock. How do you think, and yeah, this is probably the right kind of question to ask you, how do you think comedy in particular will reinvent itself if we have this continuous challenge of having to be distanced and not being able to get back into theatres?
Yes, I mean, it's going to be a huge challenge for the whole of the sort of performing arts sector, and comedy, you know, is at the sharp end of that as well. And I can't remember the exact statistics, but let's say a third, I think, of comedy venues are in danger of not coming out the other side of this pandemic, which would be a tragedy. So I think the great thing about the performing arts is it's typically, you know, sort of creative people within it, particularly if I take improvised comedy. So already you're seeing improvised comedy almost from day one of lockdown move to Zoom and these types of platforms. People are trying to recreate the format of their show in a Zoom environment. I'm already hearing rumblings about performances in parks, you know, more slightly ad hoc.
Drive-in comedy, I think, is one of the things that I heard about yesterday.
Yeah, a drive-in comedy, yeah, absolutely. So already you're seeing kind of the performing arts space sort of trying to adapt and think of new ideas. So I think it will be interesting to see what comes from it. On that creativity piece, I always think problem solving is kind of the impetus for some of the best ideas. Necessity is the mother of all invention and all of that.
Absolutely.
So I think it'll be fascinating to see what actually emerges from this. And, you know, good ideas then stick around forever, don't they? So in 20 or 30 years time, when, you know, improv in the park is just a part of what we do, you know, we can look back at this and see where it was born from.
Yeah, you can almost see this sort of history repeat itself going back to the beginning of the last century, when people were trying to breed a slightly faster horse, and Henry Ford, of course, came up with the first manufactured motor car.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that sort of mind shift that we're probably going to be seeing in the next decade or so as a result of this. But if I can just talk about you personally in terms of lockdown. How have you felt, and how do you feel that lockdown has changed you personally, if indeed it has at all?
Good question. I mean, from a personal point of view, I have a young son, as you know. He only turned one a couple of weeks ago. So I've been able to spend, I guess, the best part of 3 or 4 months seeing him every day, when ordinarily I'm out and about quite a lot and, you know, largely see him in the mornings and evenings. But to be able to really see him develop before my very eyes has been, you know, a real blessing, I would say. I also think it's, for not just me and our business, but all companies, is going to redefine the office and team dynamics and how people work. I think one of the things for us that definitely is, we're functionally able to work from home quite well. We need a computer and an internet connection, broadly speaking. I think one of the areas where more work is needed by ourselves and everyone is that kind of collaborative environment, because Zoom calls are great, but it's not quite got that same energy, and obviously you can't talk over each other in the same way. So I am looking forward to, we're still working from home, but you know, when it's safe to do so, all getting around a table together, sharing ideas, sort of talking out loud.
I think it's been very interesting talking to some of our clients who have got 200, 300 or even more staff, and they didn't necessarily have that trust that people were going to work hard unless they could see them on a regular basis. Mm. And now I think that very often, in many occasions, we're seeing the converse of that actually people don't necessarily know how to stop or when to stop, because we've got this always on culture from the moment you wake up, and people can buzz you, or they expect you to be on a Teams meeting at 8:30 and responding to emails at 10 o'clock at night. I think they've discovered not only can they trust people to work, they have the alternative problem of people potentially burning out more if they're working from home than if they were in a normal 9-to-5 or 9-to-6 work environment. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, hopefully I hope and think that our team are coping quite well with the home working element. But it is true, because obviously you normally have that distinction, don't you, between this is work, and then I drive home, and then I'm at home. And I've had heard a couple of people say they miss that 30 or 40 minute drive home, because that's sort of decompression time. Exactly, yeah. You leave work at home, and then by the time you get home, whereas just moving from one room to the next isn't quite the same. So it is important, I think, with the home working, to try and differentiate between home life and work life.
And it's not easy for people to have. Not everybody's got an office at home or a spare room, have they?
Yeah.
So if your office is in your kitchen, every time you go to cook or make a coffee, whether it's a Saturday or Sunday, it just reminds you of being in that office space. So I think if it's possible, even if you can take a corner of the room and just go, anything work-related stays there, and the rest of the space is our personal space, it's really important to try and demark that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would agree with that.
Is there anything that you have learnt about yourself during the last 3 or 4 months of this COVID challenge?
That I've learned about myself. Interesting question.
I hope that means it's going to be an interesting answer.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess I've not given it much thought, really. Have I learned about myself? I think I've learned that, and it, as I say, we were fortunate in that, you know, our work didn't drop off a cliff. But I realised I have a mode within me which I probably didn't need to untap before, we were jokingly calling it at home between me and my wife, kind of sniper mode, where I was able to almost turn off my emotions. There would maybe have been an inclination towards panic and worry, and managed to just kind of ice that down for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks while the ship was steadied, and then kind of take stock. I've also learned you can make time for things. You know, I've always thought, I've started running again, for example, and I've always, last couple of years, said, oh, whenever I haven't got time to run, when am I going to have time to run? And I think actually, when you think about it, you can make time for these things and reassess that. Is it worthwhile spending 2 hours in the car to attend a 1 hour meeting so that I have 2 hours home? Or, you know, now just jumping on a Zoom seems to be, whereas before maybe it wasn't socially acceptable, it's, you know, you can now attend a meeting in that way. And better use your time, I think, both work-wise and
I think, life-wise. Obviously, time is a social construct, isn't it? So we're never going to have more time or less time. It's always the same amount of socially constructed time. And I think one of the critical things that I've definitely taken on board is, what have I done to buy back time, or to save time, as you say, not sitting in the car for 2 hours? And what am I going to do to reward myself for that, other than giving myself more work and putting more pressure on myself and continuously keeping at this heightened state of running, which is no good for anybody, this pace, you know, sometimes you've got to pause. So I've definitely taken more time for walking or getting out on the bike and saying that this next hour I would have spent sat in the car. So that means I can go and get on the bike for 30 minutes or go and walk through the woods. There's a lovely loop of about half an hour around my house.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
I think finding those quality nuggets of time that really enrich your life and look after both your physical and your mental state has been really important to me. And I'm pleased to hear that you have found time for running, and there's no excuse when you do go back to whatever the next norm will be, not to continue that. I'll check up with Mrs. Pickle on that one.
Yeah.
Critical things in terms of, some businesses will survive. I know that Rishi Sunak has been saying that we're going to see the biggest recession that we've ever seen coming in the next few months. And I'd really like to hear from a marketing and a sales perspective. What do you feel that business leaders can do to help themselves to not just prepare, but survive a recession, however long it may take to come out the other side?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to be a difficult time for everyone. And so from a marketing point of view, there would be, I guess, three areas that I would advise businesses to give some consideration to over the, you know, the coming weeks, months, years. And the first of those would be your objectives. So what do you want to achieve from your marketing, and what do you need to achieve from your marketing as well? Because that might change in the good times. It might be that your marketing is focusing on longer term brand building, mass awareness, these types of things, because the phone doesn't stop ringing and, you know, the sales and order book looks good. As we enter a recession, it might be that your objectives change and it needs to become much more about direct sales and lead generation, in which case, how can your marketing activity support that? So is it a move more towards things like search advertising, for example, interrogating your data and trying to get some organic growth out of your existing customer base, looking at the sort of quotation and your sales funnel, how can you improve your conversion rates? It might become more of those types of things. So really understanding what you want to achieve from your marketing. I think a lot of businesses, not a lot, that's not fair, some businesses that we deal with, when we first begin our relationship with them, we'll be doing some great activity. They might have a trade press advert here, a website here. They do social media because everyone does social media, so that's happening over here. But there's no, I guess, common objective to all of those activities.
You need to
join those up and make sure they're all working towards whatever you need your business to achieve. And then once you've kind of define that objective, I would then think about your messaging. So what do you want to tell your target audience, and what do you want them to know about you? So if you imagine, I typically use a Venn diagram. Over here you've got your customer demands, this is what they want. Over here is what you can do as a business, and there's an overlap point whereby you can add value to your customer. And that's the message you should zone in on. I think sometimes businesses are guilty of trying to tell their customers everything about them all their processes and technology and things that they use, that's white noise to the customer. They don't want to hear that. They want to know how can you benefit them. And I would say now, maybe, you know, if you have an opportunity and a bit of time, is a great chance to actually speak to your customers, even anecdotally. It doesn't have to be a big sort of data-driven exercise, just anecdotally picking up the phone and trying to understand why they choose you as a business, or why they choose businesses like you, can be such a worthwhile exercise, because sometimes what you think is your unique selling point or why all your customers love you is actually maybe not the reality. So make sure that your messaging really lines up with what your customers want from you.
It's really making sure that you've got those customer connections, haven't you? That you stay connected to the customer as their needs change, that actually you can adapt your offering and look at actually how do we give them what they want and what they need at this moment, rather than what we think they want or need. And if you're not having those conversations, you won't know how that changes.
Exactly. And it's hugely important, I think, those conversations. And exactly as you say, they're ongoing conversations as well, because, you know, those demands do change and adapt. And then the final thing is exactly as you were alluding to before. So it's sort of where our company name is born from. So we use an analogy called the marketing orchestra, which is all about thinking of the sales and marketing tools available to you as instruments in an orchestra. So you could have your violin over here, that's your social media. You could have your cellist, that's your brochure. Your piano player is your website. Your saxophonist is your salesperson out on the road. And again, sort of that point I made before, when we sometimes start working with businesses, they're guilty of having all those great things happening, great instruments playing, great tunes, but all just playing on their own, just playing very quietly. So it's really about thinking, what's our objectives? How can all these instruments work together to make, and our company name comes from it, how can they make a big sound? Because there's a lot of noise in every marketplace. Everybody's shouting for the customer's attention. And the worst thing you can do is just add to that noise. So it's about cutting through that noise and making a big sound. A couple of good examples, I suppose, would be on this very small scale. If I'm sending an email out on the Thursday, what could my salesperson do on the Monday or Tuesday to follow up some of the insights from that email? That'd be very small scale. So that's, you know, an email and your salesperson working together rather than off doing their own thing. And then on a grander scale, an event, obviously not on the radar at the moment, but if I'm doing an exhibition in the September, what happens in the July and August to build some interest and momentum for that exhibition? Yeah. But then more importantly, what happens in the October and November to follow up all the good stuff that we did at that exhibition? Because again, we see, you know, sometimes we do this trade show because we do it every year. We turn up, we have a fantastic 3 days, and it's a little instrument just making its own small kind of volume. Whereas if we could connect that with some other instruments in your orchestra, we can really amplify that.
Too many times
that.
I hear people, oh, we've got 350 business cards. Great, yeah. What have
and
you
then,
done with it?
Yeah, they're in the top drawer of somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, I'm going to stop you there because obviously people can find out more about your marketing orchestra if they are interested in putting their leaders, their directors on our Strategic Leaders Program, because you
yes.
do a day on just that, don't you? Creativity in the mornings and developing your marketing and sales campaigns in the afternoon, which I know always goes down an absolute treat. So I just want to say thank you so much for being in the hot seat.
Thank you very much for having me.
And, you know, if people want to get in touch with you, then all they need to do is drop us an email or drop you an email and we'll put the details on the screen so that they can know how to get hold of you. But thank you so much for sitting in the hot seat and giving us some fantastic tips, understanding about comedy and how innovation and creativity is useful. And actually, how do we pull everything together and make sure that we're making the right kind of sounds aligned and beautifully in tune with each other as we go forward. Thanks, Mark. Great.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks.
Take care. See you soon.